just, stable, and sustainable world for all life. It's the future that 2020 reminded us we really need. While it can be hard to imagine the huge shifts it'll take to get there, one thing remains certain: how essential we are to each other. People to people, people to nature, nature to everything.
What Are You Doing Here? Is a podcast by the Emerging World Project, where voices for and about our Earth and all of her inhabitants come to you with stories from across the globe. Stories that remind us that we can achieve incredible things, but it starts with each of us acknowledging that we are part of something greater than ourselves. I am your host, Addison Brown.
And I am your co-host, Marley Alabanza.
People to people, people to nature, nature to everything.
Indeed, these connections are the bedrock of our existence. When nature thrives, people thrive. But even when we acknowledge this truth on a planetary scale, it's easy to lose sight of what that means to individual communities and individual people. People and nature find ways to thrive together. Let's not forget what that looks like. We are talking to Mia from Oahu, Hawaii. Mia is super passionate about saving animals in our world from climate crisis. She loves doing musical theater and anything Harry Potter, probably the biggest Harry Potter fan you will ever meet. She tells us that she is obsessed with the UK and accents and super excited for what the future holds and where she'll go next. She is the organizer for Youth Climate Save Hawaii, practices veganism, and spends some free time paddleboarding. Join me in welcoming our guest, Mia.
Hello, Mia.
Yeah, hi.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you very much. What have you been up to today?
Well, it's only 11 o'clock a.m. here, so I just woke up and looked at the questions and then ate breakfast and jumped on.
I like the way you start your day at 11. I like that a lot. So we want to start off by thanking you for taking the time to come and talk to us. And we're looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you.
So can you tell us when you think you first noticed your relationship to the natural world?
Well, I've always noticed it. For example, I would cry whenever a fishing commercial would come on because I felt bad for the fish. And that's one reason why I actually never ate fish. And I also have a thalassophobia, which is like a fear of the ocean and a fear of the fish. So that also incorporated. But only last year when I saw what was actually happening to animals in slaughterhouses, I turned vegan overnight.
Wow. So how old were you when you had the aversion to fish or seeing the suffering of the fish?
I was like six.
Wow. But you didn't become a vegan until just recently.
Yeah, until 12.
Uh-huh. And how do you feel about that, being vegan?
I feel way better, especially because I know I'm not causing any harm to animals. Yeah.
Is there anybody else in your family that you share the support of not eating animals with?
My mom is trying, and my brother did try to go pescatarian, but yeah.
Would you say that it's a little bit difficult, especially living in Hawaii?
Actually, I feel like it's easier.
Really? Why is that?
Because we have a lot of, there's like these farm things where you go on Saturday mornings and they have all fresh fruits and vegetables there. and it's just really easy to get fruits and vegetables here in Hawaii.
Mm.
And I feel like it's cheaper to be vegan.
Oh, isn't that interesting? And yeah. What island do you live on?
Oahu.
And where at on Oahu?
I'm in Kaimuki.
Ah, my mother lived on the North Shore for many years. Yes, I've spent a lot of time in those big waves. It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is that a fear of water or what is that?
Thalassophobia. Yeah, it's a fear of water, but I'm trying to get over that and I'm paddleboarding now, but I still have quite a big fear of fish.
Huh. And, but you're getting in a little bit at a time, a little bit more at a time, huh?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So when you became aware of the natural world, did you also notice, because of that connection, how it affected the way that you live in the world, besides not wanting to eat animals? Is there any other things that you can recall when you noticed the connection, how you might have behaved differently or chose to live differently?
I definitely noticed that I have like a different view of the world, like a vegan view, if you could say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially when I'm looking at animals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's neat. That's really neat. So who would you say has been your greatest influence?
Ivana Lynch. She's actually the one who made me vegan by her podcast called Chick Peeps.
Oh, yes. Wonderful. That is wonderful. So did you grow up with any religious or spiritual practices that may have also played into that for you?
No, I didn't actually. I'm Christian, but like that never influenced my diet. And mm-hmm. I ate meat like every single day without thinking about it.
Interesting. And then you heard the Chickpeas podcast, or you were looking at her first on something else?
It's actually funny because it all started with Harry Potter.
Oh, I like this story already.
I loved Luna, so I decided to listen to the actress Ivana Lynch's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was listening to it, I think the first two episodes in, I went vegan. And then a month later, like, she interviewed Genesis Butler. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about how you can start your own chapter with Youth Climate Save. And I was wondering if there was a Hawaii chapter, and there wasn't. So I decided to create my own.
That is a bit of perfect timing, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it was like a clear sign right in front of me.
That is kind of amazing. I really love stories like that because I think that nobody crosses our path or nothing really crosses our path for no reason. And if you're really listening, you'll get the hit, right?
Yeah.
And step right into your path. So you sort of answered my question about how you got involved with Youth Climate Save, but can you tell us what that involvement means for you?
Yeah, so on Canva, I create posts, like 3 posts a week. Mm-hmm. And I also have Youth Animal Save, which I'm a co-founder of, so I have to create 6 posts a week, if not more.
That's fun.
Yeah, and it is.
That sounds real. I love to create content too. Do you do research? Do you pick a topic? How what's your creative process when you're creating posts?
Yeah, it's normally just like the latest news. Like I look on veg news and plant-based news and just see the latest updates.
Ah, I'll have to check into those two spaces. I haven't looked at those before. So then I think what's on the news a lot right now is greenwashing. I'm wondering if you can break that down for us and sort of give our audience a really good heads up on what greenwashing is.
Okay. Greenwashing is kind of when a company or an organization tricks you into thinking that they're ethical and sustainable by using quotes, videos, and pictures, maybe of a family running in a park without doing anything good for the environment. And some of the words to look out for are green, grass-fed, eco-friendly, free-range, sustainable, humane, and ethical.
Ah. Did you see that just the other day I read an article? It was the first time that an organic farm had been investigated undercover, and they discovered a terrible amount of cruelty. Did you happen to read about that farm?
I read one about these turkeys that they were supposed to be like humanely killed. But
do you even think that's possible?
No, I don't think it's possible.
Well, this is sort of a spiritual question. When I think about being vegan, some people are staunch vegans for ethical reasons, and other folks are staunch vegans for health reasons. Do you find yourself on one side or the other?
I definitely see both sides, but ethics are the one that kind of pulled me into veganism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you ever have any discussions with people that are able or wanting to explain to you the reasons why they need to eat meat or animal products?
Luckily, I've never come across somebody who's said that to me, but I've definitely seen that online.
Mm-hmm. And what is your feeling about that?
Most times people just say that they like the taste and that it's worth more than the animal's life, which I don't agree with.
Mm-hmm. And what about, how do you feel about questioning where culture is, just for yourself, but where culture is involved, let's say fishing communities or places where the indigenous people can only have access to fish as their main source of food?
I feel like when it comes to survival, if it's the only thing that you have, then that's kind of like a different question. It's like if you want to survive or not. And in that case, I can see why they would eat fish.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's not like in a huge amount, like thousands and thousands per day.
Right. So in a sustainable fashion, if you think about animal agriculture, what do you think three of the most important things are that people should really understand?
One is that any time you're eating or doing anything involving with animal products, you're most likely the one that is causing them the pain. And not to bring things down or anything, but it's just that these animals continue to suffer and people are letting this thing happen.
Mm-hmm.
And two is actually a quote by Jeremy Bentham. The question is not can they reason, nor can they talk, but rather can they suffer? And that one really spoke to me.
Yes.
And third, lastly, I want people to know that they have power. They have the power to stop these horrifying things from happening. And the only thing stopping some people is their taste buds.
Right, right. We seem to love our food and we don't think about so much where it's coming from, but just how good it tastes. That's a hard one. It's a really hard one because we love our food, don't we? It's become so ingrained into our existence, right? Like we eat food when we're happy. We eat it when we're sad. We eat it to celebrate. It's like
every single situation.
Right. We might need to find something else to do when certain emotions come up. We might think, okay, let's go outside and, you know, I don't know. Do you have do you have any sort of, I was thinking about being outside and I spoke to Nikita yesterday from San Jose, right? And she does her yoga practice and her meditation practice outside.
Oh.
So that's pretty cool. I told her I was going to try and incorporate my yoga practice outside.
Yeah, I just did yoga today, this morning.
Did you do it outside?
No, it was inside. It was raining.
Oh. Yeah. Raining. Uh-huh. And do you have a meditation practice too?
I don't do meditation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just don't do it.
What kind of things? Because I noticed that at Youth Climate Save, that you guys are starting to talk about just a few days ago about self-care, and that young people are suffering more anxiety than one should at your age. What kinds of things do you do for your own personal self-care?
Since I live in Hawaii, I like to go to the beach a lot. Mm-hmm. Just recently, actually. I used to never go to the beach, but I'm trying to do paddle boarding, and I just started tennis. Ooh. And I really like reading.
Oh, and that's right. You're a Harry Potter fan.
Huge.
You're probably talking to the one person on the planet that has only seen one Harry Potter film and read one Harry Potter book. So you might, I know. You can really give me grief. It's fine.
Some of my friends don't even know what it is.
Are you kidding? Wait, how is that possible?
Yeah, no, I don't know. But some young kids these days, they don't even know what Harry Potter is. And it just blows my mind.
Yeah, that kind of blows my mind. I mean, I could see that, you know, I missed it. It's not that I don't know about the author and what the storyline is. And I have a slew of people in my family and in my community that just adore, you know, Harry Potter. But to not know at all, where are they at? Where are those people?
I have no idea.
That's kind of crazy. How did you get into it?
A theater by my house was doing like 1 month they're going to show a different Harry Potter movie. And my mom was like, "You've never seen Harry Potter before. Why don't we go?" And this was just in 2020.
You're kidding.
So I went to the first one and I instantly fell in love with Harry Potter.
Oh my gosh. So you hadn't read any of the books. You just started seeing the films.
Yeah, but now I've read the books two times.
And did you have any like comparison? Like, you know how some people say, "Oh, this should have never been a movie." Did you ever have that feeling? No.
No, I feel like the movies are great.
The one that I saw was amazing. I was just amazed. I wanted to go there and be there and do all that. It was so much fun.
Yeah, I love Harry Potter.
It's so interesting. Okay, so Mia, I want to go back to animal agriculture just a little bit, just so that people can connect the dots from your perspective, right? So how old are you?
13.
13. Well, what I love, Mia, is that you're 13 and you're aware of these things. So if maybe this question might be a little bit complex, but it's something to really think about in terms of as you go forward and make content, the kind of content we make and how people respond to it. So what I think is happening here is when we see suffering of another being, of another animal, it forces us to look at ourselves. So then we feel more compassion. Does that happen in that? Or how do you see it happening?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And whenever I see animals suffering, I kind of wonder, why didn't I be vegan earlier? Because I always had a sense that I knew I was going to be vegan one day. Mm-hmm. I just always felt like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, oh, maybe in like 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. And little did I know.
And it just, it's funny because I was also talking to Greta from your Victoria chapter, and she became a vegan a few years ago, but we were talking about how it just happened. I was six when I decided I didn't want to eat animals, and I wasn't, and I wasn't around anybody in my family. They weren't vegetarian. There was nothing really that was pushing me in that direction. So both Greta and I concluded that there's just something that we know. And it sounds like that's how it is for you. You're just really connected to the aliveness of everything, right?
Yeah, like, 'cause no one in my family has, like, everyone in my family eats meat but me.
Wow. And do you see a lot of, do you think that out of sight, out of mind has a lot to do with it, right? So you go to the store and there's a piece of fish in a, you know, wrapped up and you don't know anything about it. And so you just go. Do you think that has a lot to do with it?
Yeah, it does. Nowadays, when I go to the grocery store and my mom picks up like fish or meat, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. And if you had to explain it to her, would you take her to a farm or, you know, or I don't know. I mean, sometimes I just wonder what would it take, especially with fish? Did you notice that with fish people, it seems that there's a sense of, well, number one, that animals belong to us and we can do whatever we want. We can domesticate them. We can eat them. We can let them do our bidding for catching crooks or, right? So we train them in all sorts of ways and ride them and put them in competition and without ever considering what, do you think that if you showed your mom a different way of looking at it, she might feel differently? Or
I've definitely explained it to her, but I feel like one day I need to take her to like a slaughterhouse and witness it for herself, because she never wants to watch the video. She's like, no,
too painful.
Yeah, same with everybody.
Yeah, we have to, Mia, we have to figure out how to get over that hurdle. Because if we don't, are you familiar with this what might help you do your content. There's a website. It's called We Animals Media. So the woman that started it is a Buddhist practitioner, and she's a photojournalist, and she does undercover photojournalism in slaughterhouses and all sorts of those situations. And she brings a sense of, if you look at any of the images there, you really get to know and feel the animal. Like you see their eyes, you see this whole scene, that there's one really powerful image at a pig slaughterhouse in, I believe it's Argentina. And you see the people and you see the pig and just the image is so powerful. And I've heard Joanne speak before, and she says, there's lots of images of beautiful animals doing beautiful things. But now we have to stop and consider the lives of these animals. And we have to see this because we're not looking, and it's because of our looking that we've become disconnected and insensitive. How do you feel about showing pictures that actually show the suffering?
Since we are like Youth Animal Save and Youth Climate Save, we try to avoid from showing very gory pictures, because we do have like a 9-year-old in there, and young kids can really get scared by it. But I feel like in the real world, people need to see what's actually happening, and they can't just avoid it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, it's going to be wonderful to see what you do in the world. Do you have any idea what you want to focus on, or have any feelings what you're focusing on? Do you feel like you stepped into it, like you're on your path and here you go?
I want to become an actor because I love theater and singing, dancing, acting.
There is a network of information that streams through life within and around us. Trees are one of the most beautiful examples of this network, incredibly able to thrive in dying soil. They do so by communicating not only with one another, but with the other species around them that are able to produce the nutrients they need. This magic happens through the phenomenon of quorum sensing. When quorum sensing is reached, a threshold of a population is passed and hyperintelligence becomes the norm. In this true synergistic development, an entire population becomes greater than any sum of its parts. Which leads me to wonder, what would happen when we start quorum sensing as mammals? What would happen if humans would communicate more clearly through our thought processes? Through quorum sensing, we could all see that we are not each unique in consciousness.
To reach this level, we're going to have to quiet our human minds long enough to listen to the nature that we are within. If we continue to let our distracting thoughts prevail, we'll continue believing we are the ultimate beings who deserve to control life around us. But if we can humble ourselves long enough to simply listen, we could open our minds to the possibility that we could quorum sense, not only with the macro life around us, but with the micro life within us. How acutely can we tune into the greater intelligence of Mother Earth? How deep can our roots communicate with one another? How can we create a new energetic flow within ourselves? I'm encouraged to find out. If we can maintain a humble listening status as a species, where we stop telling the world what we see and start listening to what she sees, we'll have the space to view ourselves differently in this web of intelligence.
If you had one billboard for all the world to see, what would that billboard say?
If I had one billboard for all the world to see, it would be a quote by Jonathan Safran Foer. One of the greatest opportunities to live our values or betray them lies in the food we put on our plates.
What do you think, what does, rather, your vision for the future look like?
Future, I vision it that we reduce our carbon footprint by 90% by 2035. In order to do that, we need animal agriculture to stop for good, and people need to start making better choices and start considering the environment in everything that they do.
What is your top priority for humanity?
My top priority for people to start respecting the environment is definitely for people to start adopting vegan lifestyles, and that is the single best thing that anyone can do for the environment.
All right, that concludes this week's episode of What Are You Doing Here?, where we encourage change through individual engagement in direct action. Remember, friends, be the light in the room.
I feel like that, and
how are you?
Hi.
I'm Madison Brown, and this is the Emerging World Project podcast. What are you doing?
That's real slowly, but then I finally decided that I want to do science.
Thank you for stopping by. You can help us spread the word about What Are You Doing Here by sharing this episode or leaving a review in your favorite podcast app. Reviews help potential listeners see that our show is worth their time, and every single one makes a difference. For a deeper look at what the Emerging World Project is up to, head on over to emergingworldproject.org. The Emerging World Project studios are on Tongva land.